After years on the road, Timmy parked the van and picked up the mic to bring you this podcast that features interviews with people from hardcore to hair metal. This is Talk To Me with your host, Joshua Toomey.
Hey, what is up, everybody, and welcome to Talk To Me, episode 44. And on this episode, I speak to Chad Lee of Chad Lee Photography, best known for the smiling dime photo, the most iconic Dimebag Darrell photo out there. He also heads up the Nashville edition of the Ride for Dime. So a lot of great stuff, a lot of photography stuff, a lot of Pantera conversation, some Zach Wild conversation, John 5 conversation, and a whole lot of fun stuff. This is a fun chat with a really cool guy. Thoroughly enjoyed this episode, so let's get to some sponsors so we can get to our show. As always, guys, the Talk To Me podcast is brought to you by PuckHockey.com, and that's PuckHockey.com. You need to head on over there so you can get some great hockey gear for your hockey playoff run. You can always get some Signature Series stuff, some Marian Hossa stuff, their Thrashers and Slashers line with Talk To Me alumni, 36 Crazy Fists, Dave Ellefson, and Tom Hazart. So it's a lot of great stuff over there at PuckHockey.com. And they are a boutique brand, and none of their apparel is mass-produced. In fact, they don't aspire to be the next Reebok, CCM, or any of that other nonsense. They want to ensure that you are getting a truly special and unique product that has been personally approved by the athletes, musicians, and artists themselves. And they love adding the little extras like custom labeling, one-of-a-kind zipper pulls, and cool stickers. And their goal is to engage you in total hockeydom. And they look forward to pushing the boundaries and exceeding your expectations of what a hockey brand can be. So yes, head on over to PuckHockey.com, and that's PuckHockey.com. Shop until you drop, and at checkout, enter TALK, that's T-A-L-K, for 10% off your entire order. So yes, enter TALK at checkout for 10% off your entire order. The Talk To Me podcast is also brought to you by the Talk To Me t-shirt. Head on over to Amazon.com. Search out the Talk To Me podcast, and that's TALKTOOMEY podcast, and get yourself a Talk To Me t-shirt. They come in men's sizes, women's sizes, and even kid sizes, so you can outfit the entire family in Talk To Me tees. They're only $20 and free shipping if you have Amazon Prime. And if you want to support the Talk To Me podcast monetarily, a lot of cool features over at patreon.com/talktome, and you can get bonus content, an extra podcast a month, you can get guest notifications, and even get to ask the guests a question. I'm about to throw up some bonus content from this Chad Lee episode up there, a nice little quick little thing we did at the end. It's a couple minutes long. So head on over to patreon.com/talktome and become a supporter of the Talk To Me podcast.
Hey, this is Jim Brewer, and thanks for listening to the Talk To Me podcast. Not you, talk to me.
All right, guys, and now it's time for some shout-outs for sharing. Shout-outs for sharing the podcast on Facebook and Twitter. And so, if you would like your name read on the next episode of the Talk To Me podcast, when you see this podcast, show up in your feed, share it on Facebook, retweet it on Twitter, and I will search you out, and I will give you your proper shout-outs. So, the shout-outs this week are Casey Sweet, Awesome Radio, Andy Hot and Zero King, Puck Hockey, Barry Donegan and Look What I Did, Rico Kohler, Eric Hall and the Shoot the Shred podcast, Tom Hazart, nice to see Tom again, Even the Dead Love a Parade. Thanks, guys, for sharing the podcast, and hopefully you guys dug the Even the Dead Love a Parade track. Joel Baggett and Donnie Greenwell. And the retweets this week are at Steak and Titties, Abertooth Lincoln, and Potter and Family. So, yes, if you guys want a shout-out on the next episode of the Talk To Me podcast, when you see that show up in your feed, make sure to hit that share and retweet button. And before I get to our guest this week, which is Chad Lee of Chad Lee Photography, I just want to address the Jim Brewer comments that he made on the podcast that have kind of went viral in the last few days, and of him saying that, you know, Angus was cold like Walmart replacing a cashier when it came to Brian Johnson. And hopefully if you guys checked out that podcast and you're checking out newer podcast, because that episode went absolutely crazy over the last few days, and I had a bazillion downloads of that episode. So thank you guys for checking that out. And if you're a new listener to the Talk To Me podcast, thanks for coming along for the ride. But getting back to the Jim Brewer comments, I just wanted to say that, you know, Jim has a lot of things to say about the whole AC/DC situation, and I didn't really want to bait him into making any new comments that would become headline fodder. I totally agree with Jim and what he said about, you know, Angus Young coming off cold, and I think at the end of the day, we will all learn something. So if you listen to the whole thing, you know, Jim had a lot of great things to say and a lot of fun stuff about his new album coming out, which I just saw the video for Thrash. If you guys haven't seen that yet, you need to go check it out. That was a great episode. I had so much fun talking to Jim Brewer, and hopefully if you guys are new to the podcast and you've come because you heard the Jim Brewer episode, once again, thank you for coming along for the ride. You know, just hopefully you guys heard the entire Jim Brewer episode and not just that one small snippet. So now on to Chad Lee of Chad Lee Photography. Great guest to have on the podcast. It was so much fun to talk to him. A lot of great Dimebag Darrell stories, some Zach Wilde stuff. If you're in the Nashville area, make sure on June 3rd and 4th you're heading down to Marathon Music Works and supporting the Ride for Dime. So I'm going to try to make it down on the 4th. That's what I'm looking at tentatively, and we will see what happens. So hopefully you guys enjoy this conversation with Chad Lee of Chad Lee Photography. And since we talk about Dimebag and Pantera, always a good excuse to play some Pantera. So this is Domination by Pantera.
Domination, pushed into the
Well, Chad Lee, thank you for taking some time tonight.
Well, thank you for having me.
So what's been going on in the photography world lately? I know you post so much cool stuff. You know, you just recently did some Guitar World, Megadeth photos, things like that. So, I mean, what's the latest stuff you've been working on?
Well, actually, I just got back from a much-needed vacation. I was out in Jamaica for a week, and I've been home for a few days, back in the studio, in the office, trying to get things wrapped up and getting ready for what's hopefully going to be a busy month. Got a bunch of shows booked and got some cool people coming in. Rock on the Range is coming up this month. I'm trying to think who else we got. The next couple of weeks, we got Alice Cooper I'm shooting, Devil Driver, Sebastian Bach, Scorpions, Ghost. Oh, geez. Just a whole bunch of stuff coming up. And then, you know.
Yeah, it's very diverse, too. That's awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, I opened a studio last year and kind of retired from actually touring doing photography. And so I'm always still trying to, you know, get the word out and get people in here. Because the popular misconception, everybody knows me for the rock and roll stuff, but, you know, it's a studio. So I also do families and babies and weddings and commercial work and food and stuff. So I get, you know, friends and family that come in and they forget that, oh, wait a minute, you could do my kids' engagement photos.
Right. So is the money in the wedding photos or is it in the actual rock photos? You know, which one are you making, what are you paying your bills with?
For me, it's definitely not wedding photos. And that's one thing that, you know, it's funny that you say that because when I got started at this almost 20 years ago, there was a studio photographer that kind of mentored me a bit, and he did weddings. And at the time, my ex-wife and I owned tanning salons, and I built houses as well as carpenter. And while I made good money at it, I'd go in there and get tips from this guy and pointers, and, you know, he'd be bitching about how much work he had to do over the week doing a wedding, you know, and bitching the fact that, you know, he made $2,500 or $3,000 doing a wedding. And I'm like, dude, I pound nails in the blistering heat for half that.
Exactly.
I can't possibly bitch about that. But while I do weddings, I don't offer that as a service. Typically, I do a couple a year, and they're usually just for people I know and friends. And the second part of that is their money in the rock photos. I got lucky to get in when I did and get established. Today, I'd say for people getting started, there's not really any money in it because everybody's willing to do it for free just to get in and get to meet people and see and know. And, you know, when I started doing this in Chicago, I'd go shoot a concert and there were like two other guys would be in the photo pit, Gene Ambo and Paul Matkin. And both of them are legendary guys. Paul Matkin's the guy that shot the Ozzy Randy tribute album cover.
Oh,
and
wow.
Now, you know, you can go to any given show and there's 30 people up there with a camera. You know, who's looking to buy photos when someone's willing to give it away for free every night, you know? But having said that, you know, I've been established and at this for 20 years. I get a little different access and I've built some relationships. And now with the studio, I'm doing more commercial work and, you know, album covers and whatnot. But basically, I do whatever I need to pay the bills. I mean, I do, I'm also the house photographer at a venue in town called the Wild Horse. It's a pretty legendary place. And they're partnered with a showboat. Like, I do all their menu work. I do their corporate events. So I'm a photographer. I shoot everything, whether it's your dog, your garden, you know. And that's where a lot of those young guys now get pigeonholed. All they want to do is be a rock photographer and, you know, think out of the box that, man, there's 100 garden magazines on the shelves these days and 6 rock and roll magazines. Where are you going to make money?
Exactly. Yeah, the one thing I kind of wanted to get into a little bit with you, too, is, you know, with technology these days and it's kind of a, you know, with the cameras auto-focusing and, you know, you don't really even have to, understand how lenses work and all the intricacies of lighting and, you know, shutter speed and all that stuff. There's so much stuff out there that's just kind of automatic now to where maybe 20 years ago when you started, I mean, I don't even know how much of that was even out there yet. So now you've got so many kids out there with, you know, you can go and get a really decent camera and take some good shots. But, you know, I mean, what's the...
I'll interrupt you on that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Exactly what you're saying. What you said to, you know, auto-focusing, I just wrote something about that the other day, that I was out on a Mayhem tour a couple years ago, and this guy came up to me and he goes, dude, are you manually focusing every single shot? And I was like, well, yeah, doesn't everybody? I didn't really realize, you know, and you can hear it when you're up there, man. I mean, I could hear a guy next to me going, you know, spraying off 50 shots at a time, hoping that you catch one. I think I come from while that's an advantage, you know, technology, I still come from the school of, man, back when you bought a roll of film, you had 24 exposures. You had to pay for the film. You had to pay to get it processed. And the last thing you wanted to do was pay for something that was no good. So I generally take the time to pick my shots rather than spray and hope for one. But I also have the advantage of, with, you know, where I've been in my career, a lot of the times I have access to shoot entire shows when it comes to a concert. So, you know, often I won't even go down for the standard first three songs. I'll wait until everybody clears out, and then I'll go down and pick my shots. And I did the same thing when the digital started. You know, I'd come away from a concert with 700 photos, and you just start to go, wait a minute, there's no point in that. Take your time, pick the shot that you want, know the moment, and then take it. Right. And having said that, yes, with the technology, yeah, for $1,500, you know, you can go out and buy a decent camera that does all the thinking for you, pretty much. And that's kind of dumbed people down, you know.
Yeah, and before, and a lot of the listeners are going to get into the, you know, once we get into like the rock talk and stuff. But I mean, there's some business side of the podcast I like to talk about too. And that's the one thing with music, you know, the one thing that's killing music is piracy and stuff. But I mean, I think in photos, it probably has to be even 10 times worse, you know, with your photos just getting, you know, once it's out there and just people, you know, putting it on anything they can and not even necessarily, you know, making a profit off of it, but, you know, posting a picture, you know, pulling it off of Google and posting it on their Facebook and, you know, but never giving credit to the actual photographer. You know, what do you see with that? And, you know, how is that kind of destroying your business?
That's a double-edged sword too. I see people that bitch about that, you know, man, you took my picture and you didn't credit me for it and you took it off of here and there. Excuse me. While I do agree with that, at the same time, once something's been published, like, you know, in a magazine, guitar, wherever, I mean, anybody can take a picture and scan it and share it anywhere. You know, they're not obligated. They don't know any better to put your name on it. I like to try to go, and when I see it, ask people to do so. But where I run into a problem with that kind of stuff, and I just had to deal with it on Facebook the other day, and, you know, I'm always on it, is I've taken, you know, some pretty legendary shots. And I don't know how they always get them, but, you know, you get these companies or these people that, you know, they go and they grab it, and they put it on a T-shirt, and they do one of those, you know, there's several companies out there that can make T-shirts for you. You don't pay for them. You sell 100 and then they produce them, you know, limited edition, whatever. And then they pay to sponsor it. And, you know, I'm policing that stuff all the time. And I work with Pantera's management on it because it's a lot of Dimebag stuff that happens too. But we just had to go at that the other day where, you know, somebody took one of my images, they put it in a shirt and they started advertising it. I messaged the guy and I was like, yo, you know, what makes you think you have the right to just steal someone else's? Not only are you stealing from me, you're stealing from the estate of Dimebag Darrell, you're stealing from Pantera's management and taking it as your own. And some of these people get pretty indignant about it. Like, well, man, you know, I'm just a one-man operation. Well, so the fuck am I? You know, I shoot it, I promote it, I produce it, I sell it, I do the accounting. I mean, I'm a one-man operation. And, That stuff tends to hurt, you know what I mean? They'll take any image they can and put it on guitar picks, earrings, necklaces, hats, checkbook covers, whatever they can, and that tends to get frustrating. But as far as, you know, having it shared on the internet, you do, you know, you attract a whole lot more bees with honey than you do with fire, you know? If you approach people properly and ask them to credit you for it, and, you know, you'll do a whole lot better, and then you're getting free advertising because you're not getting paid for it anyway. You know, if it's on someone's Facebook page, but if you ask them to put a link, you know, hey, this is the guy that took it, and go check out his website, you might get someone else that hires you for work, or, you know, wants to buy a print or, you know, I mean, that it's like you just said, it's the business side. People don't think outside of the box. And
yeah, that's the one thing,
especially now.
Yeah, that's the one thing I've kind of run into with the podcast, and I haven't run into it too much, but I mean, I'll put an episode out and an artist will say something on the podcast, and another website will take the, take that and run with it and as a breaking story, but never credit me in it. And that's the one thing that, you know, looking back at it now, when ESPN was kind of getting into trouble for not, you know, crediting their sources, I was like, eh, you know, it's not that big of a deal. But now that I'm the source, and
sure,
you know, a metal website's not crediting me, I'm like, come on, man, I'm a one man operation, and I'm trying to get the name out there, and you know, just say, hey, you know, I don't mind them using it. It's free publicity, and you know, once Blabbermouth or the PRP or any of those great sites take the web take content from the podcast, credited me on it, I mean, that episode shoots up and listens like crazy. So I'm always down for them using it, but just credit me, you know.
And to that, I would suggest, you know, I've done it myself. You know, when you do one with somebody of notoriety, you know, send an email directly to, you know, all those different sites and go, hey, I just did a podcast with so-and-so. If you'd like to share it, here's the link to it. You know, do me a favor and put a link to it. And I'll do the same and go, hey, look, Blabbermouth shared this, and,
yeah,
you know, try to work together with those people.
No, I definitely do that. I think it once it becomes like second generation news, like once Blabbermouth takes it, they'll credit me, but then somebody will rip off Blabbermouth and not credit
right.
me. And it's just like this weird, like, you know, phone, you know, it's like the old phone game in middle school or whatever, you know, where you would start at one thing and by the end of it, it's, you know, just a completely different story. But,
sure.
Yeah, man. so, we, you know, we have one thing kind of in common. You know, you're living in Nashville now. I grew up in Nashville, and you do one thing that I've always wanted to have happen in Nashville, and that's the Ride for Dime Nashville. So just kind of break down, you know, how you got involved with the Ride for Dime, you know, being the Dimebag Darrell tribute ride that you guys do.
Short version, you know, they started doing it in 2005. I didn't get involved in it immediately for several reasons. I mean, my career was taken off. My marriage was dissolving. I didn't know. I didn't get involved for a while. But a few years in, I don't know, 5 or 6 years back, I went to the show down in Dallas. And they had me down as a guest. And Rita and I were there. And, you know, cast characters. And I did the ride. And, man, you know, they do it down there in August. And they try to tie it in around Darrell's birthday. Well, one, the ride, it was like 115 degrees in Dallas. We fucking just melted. And then, you know, we went and had the show, a bunch of bands. And that pretty much, that day was the opener for me that I said, all right, I like what this is all about. I get it. You know, Darrell's a, you know, a great personal friend. I said, I'm going to go do this where I live, help expand it, raise some money for charity in Darrell's name. And I'm going to do it in the fall when it's not 120 degrees, and we're going to ride through the mountains of Tennessee rather than, you know, down the highway in Dallas, which is not downing that at all. It's just Dallas is a big city, and you ride from, you know, a dealership past the house and all, and the venue's downtown. So, I mean, that's what they had to work with. But I was like, all right, I'm going to try and, you know, expand on this and do what I can with it and use what, you know, the opportunities that I have in the industry to hopefully, you know, broaden it a little bit. And in short, that's how it started. So the first one, we booked, you know, while I've been in this business for almost 20 years, I didn't realize that I know nothing about being a concert promoter. I just, oh yeah, you know, right. We're going to show in a motorcycle ride and it'll happen. And I get kids every day, you know, they ask, hey, how can I start one? And I never mean to discourage, but as I've learned the hard way, you know, booking the venue, getting the insurance for the venue and the ride, getting the talent, getting the spot. I mean, it's a fucking chore. But the first year, we had David Allan Coe, Soil, Pantera Tribute Band. You know, we bring Jose down, and, you know, we lost our asses on it. And each year, we've tried to broaden the spectrum a little bit. And this year, we've, you know, every year we get a little bit, you know, more notoriety and bigger sponsors. And this year we partnered up with Farm Rock, which is in Chicago, Atlanta, Oklahoma. They basically put on these shows, and we're just going to tag onto it, put our ride one day, and, you know, do a table at the event like we always do and have a presence and do auctions and raffles. But the Nashville show this year is June 3rd and 4th, and 2-day event at Marathon Music Works, and it's pretty much an 80s retro. We have Tom Kiefer, Slaughter, Vince Neil, John Corabi, The Killer Dwarfs, Vixen, Steelheart, Ricky Rocket. It's a whole bunch of great bands. And like I said, you know, the show already exists. I can bring our event to a whole new fan base and keep, you know, expanding on it. And it's, you know, it's a great thing. We do a lot of good stuff for some good charities. Rock Against MS, a dog rescue I work with in town. You know, each city has their own chosen charity. And then, you know, we have a corporation one that we donate to as well. Rita brings to the table the Ronnie James Dio Stand Up and Shout Foundation. We donate to them. We donate to Iraq, Afghan vets. You know, we try to spread it out, and we just want it to continue to grow and help where we can and keep Daryl's name alive and well, and, you know, turn new generations on to who he was and what he did.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think, and actually that lineup, I think he would have a blast, you know, at that concert.
Oh, sure.
I think, knowing of him and knowing him, you know, I've talked about it on the podcast many times, but, you know, when I was like 14, I met him outside the venue kind of thing. And over the years, I was just always that kid kind of hanging around the buses. And you know, I've probably met him like, you know, 10 times throughout my lifetime. And it's always in these really odd moments of my life. And then obviously, you know, through the years, and then Damage Plan came through when I was living, the first time I was living in Louisville. They came through, and some friends were like, "You want to go?" And I was like, yeah. And so we went, and then ended up like we were walking out the door, he was just standing out by the bus talking to some fans. And I, you know, I walked up kind of once again and just had this great conversation with him. And looking back on it, it was kind of like closure. And it's just this really odd moment in my life. But, you know, and then, you know, a couple months later, he was taken from us. So, yeah. So the Ride for Dime stuff and Dimebag has always been one of my guitar heroes, and, you know, one of my favorite bands of all time will always be Pantera, no matter how much, you know, nonsense Phil's gonna, you know, put on the band. But
sure.
You know, how did you and Dime and Rita and all that stuff, how did that all kind of come together for you?
Man, and you know, it's kind of come full circle on several levels over the years, but even more recently, back in, I think it was 89 or 90, you know, the Toxic Waltz, they just come out, it was huge with Exodus, and Suicidal was huge, and Exodus, Suicidal, and Pantera were playing at a little club in Chicago. I didn't know who Pantera was, and I went to go see Exodus and Suicidal, and I could still remember to this day seeing the banner out there and hearing people outside go, "The Cowboys from Hell? Man, I feel bad for these guys." And dude, they opened the show and blew my fucking mind, as well as everybody else that was there. And I got to meet Daryl that night and hang out. And at 16, if you had told me that, you know, I'd go on to work with this guy and he'd become one of my best friends, I'd have thought that you were fucking crazy, you know. But
right.
Over the years, I'd go to shows, and just like you said, I'd hang out on the bus and I'd get to hang out and get high with him and, you know, drink beers and do shots and shit. And then, you know, later on in life, when I started doing this for a living, Zach kind of took me under his wing, and I was out in Ozfest doing shows with them. And that last tour that Pantera was out with, we got to know each other, and I'd take pictures, and we'd hang out, and kind of became buddies. And then, you know, when the Damage Plan thing started, he pulled me in, you know, to do as much as I could. I did, you know, a lot of the endorsement ads for him and Vinny and Zilla. I mean, you know, I did a lot of their product shots for EMG and Dean and Crank and Pearl and, you know, a bunch of shows, and I did the Rebel Meets Rebel stuff. We became really close, and, you know, he brought me in to do a lot of cool stuff, introduced me to folks, and, you know, here we are all these years later.
Yeah, that was a great version, but, yeah, you know, and so many years later, too, you're kind of, you know, carrying on his tradition and his legacy and help keeping it alive, and I think that's, you know, got to be very, you know, highly commended.
I tried to, man, and you know, only for no more reason than, dude, that guy gave me a lot, and it's the least that I could do is to try to live up to what he was to people and did, and give back to others, and, you know, and keep his name alive, because he deserves to be. It's one of a kind.
Absolutely. And just you know, maybe give us a couple of dime stories. You know, I would like to hear something along the lines of you know, maybe dime with a fan, you know, something you just witnessed. I think those are always great stories because, you know, he always made everyone feel like family, no matter how long you've known him.
I mean, I'll tell the same thing that everybody does. I mean, that was what he did, man. He lived to be the life of the party, no matter what time of day it was, what the weather was like. I mean, he wanted to turn the spotlight on you, and it's just what he did. And, oh, man, specifically, I can think of, it was one of my last nights with him. We were up in Milwaukee at the end of November. They just came off a great show. He did an interview with Dean, you know, become pretty famous now. And all we wanted to do after the show was go to the casino and unwind a little bit and do some gambling. And it was snowing. It was cold. And when we got out to the bus, man, there must have been 100 kids out there. And he signed autographs and took pictures for every single one of them. You know, there was a kid that, you know, Daryl always liked to be crazy and draw on people and shit. And we had a couple of Sharpies, and this kid wanted him to draw Kiss on him. So he handed me one, you know, there was a black and a silver on him, or who did what. But he said, man, I'll do Ace and you do Gene, something, you know, one or the other. So we fucking Sharpied this kid up with Ace Frehley makeup and Gene Simmons, you know, black on one side, silver on the other. And it's just like 2 o'clock in the morning, 1 o'clock. And the kid's like, man, I got to be to work at 8 a.m. and I'm going to go in just like this. And that was, you know, Daryl got such a kick out of that, you know,
absolutely.
That was just, it's what he did.
Yeah. It was such a fun thing to be around. And, you know, like I say, and I'll say it one last time on the podcast, but I mean, you know, just, from day one, you know, the first time I met him when I was like 14, and I, you know, we chased him down in a hotel lobby, you know, to where, and then, you know, the last time seeing him at the Damage Plan show, you know, I always felt like I was his best friend, even though, you know, he probably didn't know me from Adam.
Well, and, you know, dude, having said that, I mean, it's again, it's what he did and who he was, and that's what he did. He made everybody feel that way. Sorry, I'm making myself a cocktail here in the bar. But, you know, even up to the very end, dude, as long as I had known him and as close as we were, I, when everything happened, you know, I felt the same way. And I mean, I was, you know, scheduled to have delivered a guitar at that show that wasn't ready. It didn't happen. And, you know, we were going to see each other the next day. But when everything happened, I didn't know if I was, you know, should I go down to Texas? Were they going to have a private service? You know, I mean, I just didn't know where I fit in it. While I knew we were incredibly close and I considered him one of my best friends, right, the guy knew millions of people for, you know, a couple of decades. And I called Rita and I was like, hey, you know, should I come down there? I don't know. I feel like I should. She goes, dude, your pictures are hanging on the walls of a fucking house. Of course you should be here. And, you know, when I walked in that night, Vinny was sleeping, and she said, hey, Vinny's been waiting for you to get here. And we went through some pictures and said, look, I want you to find the biggest, happiest, smiliest picture of my brother that you can. You're one of his favorites. And we pulled out, you know, what you've seen now and known as the memorial photo, kind of this big smiley picture of him. And they used it at the service and, you know, T-shirts and the funeral card. And that was the moment I went, wow. You know, like I said, like you just said, I didn't know where I really stood in the grand scheme at that point, because he knew lots of people. But I'm just proud and honored that you got to know the guy, work with him, and I'm happy to, you know, do what I can to carry on his memory and his, you know, name.
Yeah, and I definitely, you know, just from the Pantera fans to you, you know, we appreciate it, and thank you so much. And just kind of a question, because I know you worked a lot with Zach. You know, how, I don't even know if you've ever answered this or what your thoughts are on this, but, you know, with the, you know, tons and tons of times they've brought up, you know, doing a Pantera reunion tribute kind of thing with Zach playing Dime's parts. I think that, in my opinion, Zach's the only person that could do it and get away with it. But, I mean, you know, just coming from your side where you know Zach and you knew Dime and the Pantera guys, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
I did work with Zach for several years, and he's another one that I have to give credit and thanks to for, you know, taking me out. And because of him, people got to know who I was and whatnot. But honestly, I see that all the time, and I appreciate everybody's enthusiasm and ideas. I personally don't think that he would be just the one to do it. Not that he can't, but in a perfect world, if it were to happen the way I would like to see it, and others, you know, have talked, I think it'd be really cool if they were, especially now that there's not an Ozfest and a Mayhem again, you know, do a festival kind of tour and bring out, you know, bring, of course, Vinny's band. Hell yeah. Bring whatever band Rex is playing with. Bring, you know, Down. Bring Black Label. And then bring the people that Daryl, that kind of music, and his other friends. Bring out Machine Head, Anthrax, Disturbed, Zombie, you know, Hatebreed, you know, and those kinds of bands. And everybody plays like a normal festival day. And at the end of the night, do a 60-minute tribute set. And rather than have just Zach fit in, have Zach do a song, have Scott Ian do a song, have Kerry King do a song, have Phil Demmel do a song. I think that would be really cool, and it'd be a great way to
make a tribute. Because
then, you know, all of his friends get to get up and show tribute and do it. And I think that's just my personal take on it. You know, I'm sure we'll get slammed for it somewhere, but I think that would be a cool way to do it if anything were to ever be able to happen. I think that would be neat, but, you know, that's all in the cards. While I understand that everybody says it won't and it can't, and I respect everybody that doesn't want to, for whatever reasons, you know, Kiss was never going to put the makeup on again. Joe and Steven Tyler were never going to play together at long time. I mean, I never say never about anything. People get divorced and they get married again too. But, you know, if it doesn't, man, they have a hell of a legacy, and they left us with a great book of music.
Yeah, I mean, especially even with the Guns N' Roses stuff. I mean, you never thought you would ever see Axl and Slash together. And, you know, now they're out, you know, they're about to play, you know, Nissan Stadium coming up soon.
Yeah, it's 23 years. Crazy. I mean, so I don't count anything out. But like I said, you know, ultimately that's up to Rex and Phil and Vince. And, you know, who can fault for how they feel about anything? You know, it's ultimately up to them, and it's their legacy. And, you know, if it gets left alone, you know, that's fine too.
All right. So, Chad, how did you get started in photography? You know, who were some of the first people you took photos of?
As a kid, my mom always, and still to this day, always had the camera in her hand, taking pictures and stuff. And I was always the one that took pictures at our parties and shit, and you know, snuck them into concerts and all. But back in like 1997, John Five, most people know him for his work with Marilyn Manson and Rob Zombie, pretty much, you know, the Steve Vai of today.
It's an incredible guitar player.
We used to trade Kiss posters with each other via the internet, eBay and stuff.
Oh, wow.
He's a huge Kiss fan. And, you know, we became good friends. And I went out to a Manson show, and I had just shot some Kiss photos on I think it was a reunion tour. And I brought some, and he was like, dude, these are amazing. You should do this for a living. And I was like, how do I do that? You know, that'd be great.
Right.
Niels Lozauer was always one of my heroes. And John hooked me up to go to the NAMM show that year. He's the one that introduced me to a few other folks. You know, I went out to see him on Ozfest in, I don't know, 98 or whatever. But and how I ended up shooting Zach and getting to know him. But it was through John. He helped me sell my first photo and kind of get known and brought me around, and I did some stuff with him. And then we stayed friends through the years, of course, and, you know, shot him with Manson and Zombie. And I just always like to kind of credit him as the guy that, you know, without John, I mean, he's the dude that said, hey, you're good at this. You should do it. And I just come in full circle with him. There's a magazine called Rock Revolt Magazine that they just did a story on John, and I shot the cover of it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, you know, I've done some T-shirts with him, and he's just, you know, he's an incredibly talented guy. He's one of the best guitar players out there, one of the sweetest dudes, and, you know, if it wasn't for him, you and I wouldn't probably be talking today.
That's awesome, man. So so just kind of going through your, you know, just a rough history in your brain of what you know, your all of your shots that you've had, you know, what are some that kind of jump out? You know, obviously the smiling dime is, you know, I was actually just looking at that photo, and yeah, it's the one you still see, and I'm almost positive, you know, I have one of those Dimebag shirts. Hopefully you got a little bit of money from that shirt, but
man, you know, and putting the word iconic still, I mean, as long as they've been at it, still just, you know, blows my mind as a fan of music and all of this in general all my life. I've been fortunate to be in some spots and, you know, take some photos that have gotten recognition. And then as I sit here back in my studio looking at the gallery wall, you know, you've probably seen what they dubbed the triple threat. It's we did a photo shoot with Zach, Carey, and Dime one day down in Houston. You know, it's the only time those three guys were ever photographed together in the same room. You know, I've shot hundreds of magazine ads for different companies. You know, Kirk Hammett handpicked one of my images for his 30th anniversary campaign with ESP Guitars. You know, I've shot some book covers, and I mean, there's several of them out there that you know, still blow my mind that people, you know, I shot them 14, 10, 12, 9 years ago, and they still pop up on the internet, and they still pop up in magazines and stuff. You know, I spent, gosh, 3, 4, 5 years on and off the road working with the Black Label guys. I got to do a lot of cool shit, you know, DVD stuff with them. I shot a Michael Schenker album cover. I mean, that just blew my mind. I mean, going into a record store and seeing albums that I shot the cover for and knowing that I was the kid that you should just go back and flip through the vinyl. And, you know, as we did in our generation, you looked at something and you may never heard of them, but you looked at the cover and it was the image that you saw that made you go, oh, wow. And those kinds of things still, you know, just blows my mind.
Yeah, that's amazing. You know, there's been so many times where you buy the album for the album cover and you get it home and it's garbage. So, you know, that was always yeah. a fun gamble at the record store. And that's one thing kids will never, ever know, because now with Spotify and all that nonsense, you're going to know before you buy. But yeah, man, actually, you know, once again, you know, kind of thinking about having you on the podcast for a while, you know, it's kind of like when you, maybe you want to buy a certain kind of car and then all of a sudden all you see is people driving that certain kind of car. And then now it's like, you know, every time I'm looking around, I'm looking at metal photos and in the corner, it's like photo by Chad Lee. You know, you see that now, like every time you look, turn around, man, and there's a, you know, some iconic stuff, obviously with that recent, you know, Dave Mustaine Guitar World cover. I was at the, you know, the grocery or whatever the other day. And I was like, oh, check that out. Oh, Chad Lee took that photo. That's so cool. So,
you know, and actually I had to clear that with a few people. I actually didn't do the cover and the story in there. The one that I did do was and while it's a cool shot, I did that. Dean sent me over to Dave's house later on the holidays, and I did the ad for his new guitar, that the Holy Grail, the one that's got the gold flake in it. So, but a lot of people are like, oh, dude, because I put it out there that, hey, I have this photo, you know, of Dave and the Guitar World, and everybody kind of ran with him as soon as I did the whole thing, which is, you know, I'm honored that people thought that. But, yeah, I just did the Dean ad, which has now been,
I think it's like,
right,
maybe it's like right on the inside cover. I mean, I think it's,
yeah, probably.
Maybe once you, once you open it, maybe that's where the confusion comes from there. But so what's it like working with Dave? You know, I've had Dave Ellison on the podcast, and he's like the nicest person on the planet. But, you know, I've never had any actual interaction with Dave Mustaine.
Both of them are great. And, you know, as a matter of fact, we just had, they were here in town doing tour rehearsals this last week. And, you know, we have that thing that goes on Tuesday nights now, the rock and roll residency. And Ellison came up and jammed with the guys, and we got to sit around and bullshit a little bit the other night. And, you know, Junior is always a fun guy to hang out with. But Mustaine, he's another one, dude. I mean, he's a fucking legend. And I've been a fan for as long as I can remember. And, you know, just another guy that I'm honored to become, gotten to be good buddies with and get to do a lot of work with. We've done a few photo shoots with Dean now. You know, I did their family Christmas cards for him and stuff. And I'm glad to have him here in Nashville.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Yeah, that's the one thing, you know, I guess the similarities in our, you know, you do the photography, I do the podcast, and when I get a guest like Dave Ellison that, agrees to come on, and then you sit there and you think about it for a minute, and you're like, I used to just listen to Rust in Peace at, like, obscene volume.
Yeah, I mean, and it, yeah. I keep saying that shit blows my mind, but it does. Yeah. I mean, I've been a Megadeth fan for as long as I can remember, And, you know, I remember seeing them open for, Aerosmith back at Alpine Valley in Wisconsin, you know, 60,000 feet outdoor shed sitting in the lawn. And, you know, if you'd have told me again at that age that 20 years down the road I'd be shooting Dave's family Christmas cards at his house, I'd have told you, you know, you're fucking crazy.
So what was it, what made you decide to move from Chicago to Nashville? What was it, what made that move happen?
I went through a horrible divorce and had to get out of where I was. And that's the short version. But other aside from that, too, my mom lives down here. And my mom and I have always been close. So getting back, you know, in her area was great. And, man, I had lived in Chicago all my life. And while it's a beautiful city and I love it and proud to have been from there, dude, if I never see snowfall from the fucking sky again, it won't bother me. And, but I had enough 20 below days, you know, scraping your windshield. I'm all over it, you know. Down here, I can ride my bike on Christmas and New Year's and throughout the year, and I don't mind that whatsoever. I tell you, you know, when I first got here, while it's Music City, it's known for country music. And while, you know, there's plenty of metal fans and rock shows come through here, at first, man, there was nobody that I'm known for working with that was coming through here regularly. Where I lived, up to, I was, you know, 40 minutes between Chicago and Milwaukee. So any given night of the week, there was a show somewhere. I could hop on a bus in Chicago and hit the road and go to Chicago and Indiana, Minnesota, Detroit, and get dropped off in Milwaukee, and always had work. And when I got here, I was just like, oh, my God, what am I going to do? And things have grown, you know, with the residency and a lot of people move. I mean, just in the last year and a half, Joe and Lizzie from Hailstorm have moved here, Mustaine, Nick Mars, Ray Luzier, Rachel Bolin, Chuck from Alice Cooper, you know, John Karabi's here, Mark Slaughter's here, like, and more people are moving every, dude, I got a photo shoot with Deftones next week. They're rehearsing here. Megadeth is rehearsing here. Like, Nashville's becoming pretty diverse, and so it worked out for me at a good time.
Yeah, it's definitely crazy. I mean, like, even, you know, prior to the interview, you know, we were kind of talking about where I grew up in Nashville, and, you know, as I was getting older and, like, you know, graduating high school, we started noticing, like, we'd go to shows and, like, the Nelson Twins were there, and we would look around and there's, you know, the guys from Cinderella are there, Bret Michaels is there, and, you know, like, you're like, what's going on? Why is, like, the L.A. Sunset Strip kind of all of a sudden, you know, moving to Nashville? And then, you know, within the last, you know, last 10 years or so, man, Nashville's just, like, boomed to this crazy, like, almost super hip town or something. It's an insane thing.
Oh, ridiculous, dude. You drive downtown and there's like 27 fucking cranes in the sky. I mean, it's growing immensely, and it's fun. You know, dude, the very first cassette I think I can remember buying with my own money was Cinderella's Night Songs. And, you know, now I see Eric all the time, and I run into Tom Kiefer at, you know, Publix. He lives, you know, down the street. I mean, it's crazy.
No, that's awesome, man. Yeah, just, you know, growing up around the Cinderella guys, man, it's just, it's always been, it was funny. It was funny because they moved to town at that time where it was like the late 90s and, you know, the hair bands have kind of died out, like, you know, 93-ish, like 94, they were still kind of holding on. So, I mean, we were still kind of tail end of that, like, kind of dying off thing, man. And it was kind of, it was hard, you know, when we first started demoing with them and rehearsing or, recording with Fred, you know, it was like, yeah, we're recording with Fred Corey from Cinderella. And then it was like, it still had a little bit of a stigma about it. But now, you know, 20 years later, it's like the coolest thing you can do is say that you're a Cinderella fan or you know Fred. And it's so crazy.
Sure.
But
my first photo shoot when I moved to town, actually, was Jeff LaBar was in a band called, I'm drawing a blank now. Rufus Fontaine. And,
okay.
You know, I mean, because I didn't know those guys. And my first, you know, studio shoot in town was with the dude that, you know, played on all those great songs.
Just kind of get into some other stuff. There's photographers out there trying to kind of break into the business. Other than quit, I mean, what are your words of wisdom to them?
That's a tough one, man, because I don't ever mean to be discouraging. But what I can say is practice your craft, practice. Go to every bar that you can, shoot incredibly shitty, low-lit venues that will force you to learn to work your camera, make it an extension of yourself, and shoot everything you can. Don't pigeonhole yourself. Go out and shoot buildings, shoot people, shoot, you know, landscape. I mean, don't pigeonhole yourself, like I said earlier, is I want to be a rock photographer. As the word photographer, you know, take pictures of everything and, you know, be well-versed in your craft and be persistent, you know, just,
yeah.
And be genuine and get paid for what you do when you deserve it.
What do you think about, you know, kids at shows with their iPhones out, with their, you know, Instagram filters and all that stuff? I mean, is it, do you wish they would put that down and kind of leave it to the professionals and let, you know, watch the show and all that stuff?
Or? No, because, I mean, I can't say that fully because that's how, you know, I got doing what I do. I was a kid that snuck my camera into shows and took what I would look back at now as really shitty pictures because I wanted it as a memento of the show, you know, in a memory, and I developed that into a career. So that I can understand, but, you know, an iPhone isn't going to produce something that you can hang on your wall either, you know? But who makes photo albums anymore either? You know, everybody has online, and I'll share it with you. You know, remember you used to run to Walgreens or Kmart or the photo hut in the parking lot and get your photos developed, and you couldn't wait to look at the pictures that you shot last night. But unfortunately, you know, you got home at 11, you dropped them off, and you hoped to get them back in 2 days. And generally, you went through 100 of them and saw three that were really cool. But, you know, the iPhone, you have it now, and you can tell the world where you were and what you did and what you saw. So, while I think it's cool, you know, it's a hindrance, too. You know, everybody's Sully from Godsmack used to, you know, do this thing in part of their stage show a couple years ago where, dude, put your phones down. This is happening in front of you. Take it home as a memory and watch it and experience it through your eyes, not your camera.
Yeah, one of the best things I've ever seen was the comedian Aziz Ansari, you know, when he does that, when he came out on stage and he's like, all right, everybody get your phones out right now and I'm going to act like I'm telling a joke. And you take that picture and you post it on Instagram right now, but then please put your phones up. And, you know, he did like three or four different poses like he was mid-joke. And then he's like, all right, everybody put their phones up now. You know, and then like that, I always thought that was a cool way to do it, man. Because
that's
funny. You go to a show now and you're like sitting there watching, you know, if you're behind somebody, you're going to watch the show on their phone if you're not careful, you know?
Exactly. And to the band's disservice and the fans too, or the upcoming photographers, you know, man, again, I get it, you know, it's a memento, it's a memory, but you see so many people sharing these pictures that are just not good or not flattering or they're bad. You know, you're doing, if you're want to be an aspiring photographer or you're trying to help promote a band, you're not doing either of you a service by, you know, trying to share a shitty photo. And
yeah,
I don't mean that discouragingly or arrogantly, but, you know, it's like if you're writing, you know, recording music or whatever you do for your living, you wouldn't put out a bad product.
Right. Yeah, the bands these days are definitely growing up in a time where they pretty much have to be on at all times when they're on stage, not just the first three songs, and then they can do whatever they want.
On and off stage, man. Someone, you know, you're gonna piss if someone's got a camera next to you.
It's definitely crazy. Yeah, I've definitely, you know, I ended my touring days in like 2007, and, you know, that was kind of the scanner, I think, was still kind of around, so you'd find some terrible photos, you know, from someone's disposable camera online, but definitely not the way they look now, so.
You remember when the internet was in its infancy? I'm a huge Kiss fan, and I wanted to go search, you know, old photos all the time. And remember when it would take 4 minutes to like get the screen to load an actual photo? You know, they were bitmaps, and it took on a dial-up connection 3 minutes for you to get an image to come through that was grainy. And now, with the swipe of your iPhone, it's around the world.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, you would sit there, and you would, you know, the page would load, and then sometimes it would just stop, you know, or you'd have to reload
it. Yeah, you're like, son of a bitch! It was like trying to watch the Scrambled Playboy Channel when you were a kid. Hey, I think I see a nipple.
A nipple just shot across the screen. It's great.
Right. Ah, it froze! That's funny.
When you take a photo of a band like, say, a Kiss or a Slipknot or Ghost or, you know, anything that has a whole lot of theatrics, is that almost more fun to shoot than, you know, say just a regular rock band that's up there, you know, jeans and t-shirts, or do you, you know, you find find something in both?
As far as the craft goes, I mean, you know, I'm about imagery and making things look cool and good and, you know, a memory. But, of course, theatrics are always fun. It's more, I commented on Dan Donegan, a picture he shared yesterday from Disturbed. you know, great friends. I've known those guys a long time. I went and I shot them a couple weeks ago at a club in Memphis. And while it was an amazing show, the lights were great. It was intimate setting. You know, Dan put a picture up the other day of, you know, they're getting ready to head out with Zombie. And it was, the stage is just full of flames. And it said, we're coming back with all our toys. And I said, you know, I wrote, hey, man, can't wait to see you guys again next week. And I look forward to shooting this extravaganza. Yeah, I mean, it's what turned us all on to Kiss and Alice Cooper to begin with, you know, imagery yeah. and theatrics. So, of course, that's fun to shoot. And, man, you know, when it, whether it's jeans and a T-shirt or leather and chains, that's awesome. But, you know, it looks the same all night. When there's the lights are changing and there's pyros and colors and stuff, you know, it gives you something else to capture.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, getting into bands. And obviously when I was like 9, I got into Kiss. And, I you know, they were already out of their makeup by that time. But I was into 70s Kiss. At like 9 years old, watching Kiss Meets the Phantom, thinking it's like a sure. cinematic gold, you know, the cinematic gold. And I was like, this is the greatest movie I've ever seen. But you know, getting into the music that way too. I mean, obviously, you know, I listened to the music first, and then I was like, that's what they look like too. Oh my God, this is great. And I was painting my face up and all that stuff, running around the house like an idiot. But one thing that drew me into music was the theatrics and stuff. But then, you know, obviously Metallica and Megadeth and all those bands that just kind of stripped it down to just guitars and rock, you know, it was... You got to love that, too.
Yep, I love it all, man.
So what's one thing, you know, like you said you worked a lot with Zach. You know, how was he with the fans, and how is he, you know, interacting with the people, and, you know, maybe one good story from him?
Oh, man, he's great. You know, you never know what he's going to say or what he's going to do other than when he's out there with a guitar in his hand, you know that he's going to fucking melt your face. But, you know, much like Daryl, dude, he's always great with the fans. He's always got a story to share and, you know, interact and, yeah, I mean, he's a great dude, man. And I owe a lot to him and, you know, always take time out to talk to people and throw pics and take pictures and sign shit. And, he's, you know, he's just, again, another one of those legends that, I'm thankful to have gotten to know and work with. And, you know, I highly recommend if you've never seen him, definitely go out and, a Black Label show or catch him on the Experience Hendrix tour, or, you know, they were just here with Generation X. I mean, he's a guy that's always going to be out there doing shit and carrying the torch for guitar players.
Do you have any good Ozzy stories? Did you get to run into him at all?
You know, thanks to the internet and Facebook these days, you know, they give you those reminders. And I got one, I think it was yesterday or the day before, that it was 2 years ago to that day. I went and I saw Sabbath at the Hollywood Bowl. Got to sit front row, you know, got to go back and see Ozzy and everybody. And I have this great picture. And all those years I spent on Ozfest, I never bothered to get a picture with Ozzy. He was just one of those guys that just never, I just, dude, he's Ozzy, you know.
Right.
So we got a picture together that day, and Facebook reminded me of it, but it's a great picture. He's got this huge smile on his face, and he's laughing, and people always go, dude, what did you say to him to make him laugh like that? And, you know, when I walked up, he was like, hey, how you doing? I haven't seen you in a while. How's that? And I said, dude, one of my favorite times ever. You remember when you guys chucked that TV out the window in San Antonio? And because I had heard the story from Zach 100 times about how Ozzy just fucking went crazy and laughing over the noise that it made. And, dude, as soon as I mean, I didn't even get the sentence out of my mouth, and he's just laughing. And, oh, my God. And, you know, I don't have a whole lot of direct interactions with him, you know, while I would see him every night. You know, that's one that comes to mind right away, especially, like I said, because Facebook reminded me of it the other day.
Yeah, it's funny. I noticed on your Facebook, too, it said something about a reminder of a year ago today, the day that we're recording the podcast. And it's like, a year ago today, I was recording with Jose Mangan, and, you know, you're doing something else. And I was like,
in
nice.
New York City. Mark Slaughter was on that metal show talking about the new record and stuff. And I actually got to do Stump Trunk, and I stumped him. But that earlier in the day, yeah, I went over to Jose's been a good friend and supporter for many years, and I went over to SiriusXM headquarters and got to see, you know, Howard Stern's office and stuff, and showed me around. But yeah, sat down and didn't interview him much like this for about an hour. And then that night while I was at the metal show, I had my phone on silent, but it was going all night long with people going, dude, I just heard you on Jose's show.
That's awesome. Yeah, Jose's great, man. I actually met him in Memphis in like 1997 or something crazy like that. Like when he was still doing college radio, and I've actually back in the day when like my band had like a, we used to have this like binder mailing list, like where you'd write down your actual mailing address, you know, back in the day when you do stuff like that. And so I've got like Jose Mangan, you know, and W whatever the local station there in Memphis is and all that stuff. So I need to reach out to him. I haven't actually talked to him in years, but that's a good dude, man. But yeah, I was go ahead.
He'll be here for the rest of the time this year, man. We should come on out and you know, hang out for the day and have some fun.
Yeah, I'm gonna definitely have to come down, man. I was wanting to go last year, but you know, obviously with just family and everything else going on. But I'm gonna definitely mark it down on the calendar and try to get home. I mean, my dad still lives in Tennessee, and you know, all my friends are still there and stuff too. So I'll definitely have to get back down and see you guys, and hopefully the Decibel Geek guys will be out and all that stuff too.
They definitely will. They're supporters and sponsors of the ride, and you know, very supportive, great guys.
Yeah, super great guys. So, Chad Lee, man, thanks for taking some time tonight, and I definitely appreciate you coming on.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me, man. You know, people can keep up with me and all this social stuff that we've talked about. My Facebook pages are Chad Lee Photography. The studio has its own page, Chad Lee Photography Studio. And then, you know, the old .com, ChadLeePhotography.com. And like I said, man, I do weddings, babies, bar mitzvahs, birthdays, corporate, whatever they need, man. I'm here for it.
Very cool, man.
And there you go, guys. Some bonus Pantera on the Talk To Me podcast. Always need a good excuse to play some Pantera on the show. So thank you to Chad Lee of Chad Lee Photography for coming on the podcast. Make sure you go hit up June 3rd and 4th down at the Marathon Music Works venue down there in Nashville, Tennessee. Hit up the Ride for Dime. Check it out. Support everything that Chad Lee is doing. And make sure to head over to ChadLeePhotography.com. He has a lot of great things going on all the time. A lot of great charity stuff. And he's always working with bands like Disturbed. I know he was selling some autographed 8x10s of Disturbed. And those were going towards a good cause. So always support Chad Lee and everything that he's doing. And can't wait to have him on the podcast again. Talk some more great stories, and hopefully you guys enjoyed the show.
Hey everybody, this is David Allison from Megadeth, and you're listening to the Talk To Me podcast.
All right, a couple things going on. I will be going to the Flaw and 40 Below Summer Show here in Louisville, Kentucky. I will be taking my handy-dandy recorder with me. I'm going to try to get a couple of interviews. That show is hosted by Ron Jeremy, so that would be so classic to get Ron Jeremy on the podcast. So if you're out there and you know anyone in the Ron Jeremy camp, send them my way. So yes, Flaw and 40 Below Summer, hosted by Ron Jeremy. I'm going to go check that out. Since it is Derby time here in the Derby City, the Kentucky Derby runs this weekend, so a lot of great festivities going on, and it's always a great, great time in this town. This town blows up for a two-minute horse race. It's absolutely insane. So just wanted to say thank you guys for listening to the Talk To Me podcast, and on Tuesday, my guest will be Mike Howe of Metal Church. Yes, Mike Howe of Metal Church is on the Talk To Me podcast. We have a lot of fun talking about the new album, talking a lot about the old days, about my favorite Metal Church album, Blessing in Disguise, and everything that went into that album. I will see you guys on Tuesday. So for the Talk To Me podcast, I am Joshua Toomey, and you guys have a great weekend.